Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
And I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here it is, July 9th, 2019.
Yep.
7919.
Yep. I'm just going to pump your sound a little bit because you're a little bit light.
There we go. I'm light. I wish I was light.
I seem to be light as well. You know what? I'm not. I hope this recording works. I hope this recording works because it doesn't look good to me. Let's put it that way. Looks like it's a little bit light. Anyway, I'm Andrew Horowitz and this is John C. Dvorak and everything is just great, isn't it?
Well, you can turn it up and post.
Yeah, I'll do that. I'll have to do that. It just looks like you're really coming in weird. I don't know exactly what the story is on this, but we will endeavor to figure this out. I'm recording it on a separate device too, and so worst comes to worst, we'll just deal with it there. Anyway, how are you? How was your fourth?
The fourth was kind of horrible around here because the fog not only rolled in as usual, but it rolled into such an extent that you couldn't see anything out the windows. Yeah. Normally what happens on the 4th of July, the fog rolls in, you can't, from where I am, I can see the fireworks from the house. You can't see San Francisco except once every 5 or 6 years. But you can always see Berkeley. But this year, couldn't see Berkeley.
Yeah.
So.
Well, we had an interesting time.
A lot of illegal fireworks going off all over the place.
Really?
Yeah, much more so than in the past.
Huh. Interesting.
Trump economy.
Well, we're having a hard time on the stream. I don't see anything on the stream picking up. The stream seems dead. So I don't know what to say about that, but we will try to fix that. And I'm sorry for all the stuff going on here. I think we got to fix now. So there you go. Okay, let me tell you about what's going on now that I'm kind of, my brain is all scrambled from trying to get this together and the look that your microphone is really light. So I'm going to punch you up a little bit more. I don't know how this is going to sound in the end, but we got an employment report that came out last week with a very big surprise, like a really, really big surprise.
How big of a surprise was it? I thought it was pretty much within range.
There was expectations of about 160, maybe 170,000, and it came out at 225.
Okay, well.
You know? So, I mean, that was, I think, generally speaking, it was a pretty big surprise when you consider the fact that, you know, there was this real worry out there that, you know, last month we saw 70,000 and here we are this month. Expectations are, oh my God, it's all going to end. It's all going to come to an end. And, you know, now it's just better, just much better.
Hmm. So, well, that, I know the markets reacted as you predicted, which is that if it went way over, which it, I guess, did, even though that's not way over as far as I'm concerned, but it did. That means everyone go, oh no, the Fed's not going to do anything. And so because of this, and so they got depressed and market went down.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened, you know? So
they don't even care about the good news, which is the jobs. Everyone's working, having a great time. No. That's not what everyone cares about. They just care what the Fed's going to do. The whole market just looks at what the Fed's going to do. It's all they care about.
So we saw some big news for a major Eurozone bank. We'll talk about that. Negative yields proved to be an interesting arbitrage opportunity. And we're going to have an update on John McAfee.
Oh, or as we call him, McAfee.
Yeah, McAfee.
You say McAfee, I say McAfee.
What does he say it is?
He says McAfee, I believe.
Yeah. He's an interesting fellow, to say the least. I mean, he's yeah.
He still owes me a dinner.
Oh?
Yeah.
And would you take it if he offered it?
Of course.
You would.
He won't be around here. He's not in the Bay Area anymore, as far as I know.
Yeah. Last I heard, he was in Cuba, which we'll talk about. So what's going on with the markets now? So we got really close to that 3,000 level for the S&P 500. This magical round number. Markets love, you know, they love round numbers.
Yep.
And it's a kind of this psychological, weird situation that goes on where you have they call it a magnet, where you get to a certain point. And, you know, it just needs to get there. and it does everything in order to get there. And then sometimes when it does, it hits that ceiling. It's kind of like a weird invisible line across it, you know, and it, I don't know if they're hundreds or 500s, but a lot of times, I'll tell you something, when you work a stock, and let's say the stock is coming into a certain point, you never set up your stops right around a round number. So let's say you bought a stock at $35 and you're like, okay, I'll hold it down to 30. I'm willing to hold it down to 30. So what do you do? So when it gets to 30, a lot of people put in a stop right there. And when that 30 number comes, there's a lot of stops going on. So it kind of crashes right through very quickly. And oftentimes it pops right back up. Everybody's like, oh man, I shouldn't have put in that price. It went down, it went up. So what you do is you try to do something that is below the level of where you think that's going to be so that when the stops hit, you don't get hit as well. Does that make sense?
Oh, so yeah, you don't get kicked out.
Right.
Unfairly.
Right.
Yeah, we see this with our stock picks all the time.
Right, but we don't necessarily have round numbers.
No, but we see where it's coincidental.
Yeah. So there is that going on. We have the Dow Jones kicking up a little bit. China market's still under pressure. It's a concern that the trade talks are going to stall again. But our markets don't seem to care. I mean, we saw a 2% drop in the Chinese markets a couple of days ago. Our market's like, okay, that's nice. Started out down today, 0.5%, finished up by the end of the day. So it's kind of interesting that our market seems impervious to any of this noise, whether it's the debt ceiling that's kind of now starting to crop up again, China trade talks, Iran oil, whatever, just kind of name them. We seem kind of impervious. As a matter of fact, when the market goes down, it looks to me that the folks that are looking to get, it's almost like they get back at the markets. You know, they're mad. They want to, they're like angry. Whoa, markets can't go down. And I'm going to show them that we're not going to let this market stay down. And they start buying in like crazy. I mean, this happened this morning. We had a pretty big tick down in terms of selling algos and selling programs that hit right at 9:30 this morning. And then from there, I noticed this because I saw something called the tick. And the tick is a calculation, broadly speaking, of the down ticks versus up ticks of a stock. Of the whole market. So you have a situation where I saw a negative 1,000, which is a pretty big number. That's the net number. But yet markets were stabilizing and actually starting to creep a little bit higher right off the bell. And I said, you know what? This is not a market to necessarily short into. And lo and behold, behold, we saw it play out that way. The drug companies last week got a hit because President Trump floats the idea that the U.S. is going to allow only the lowest cost paid by any country's citizens or whatever the cost is that is passed on for a drug in any country to be the cost that is paid here in the United States.
That's pretty radical.
That's really radical. I mean, maybe the average or something, whatever, but
kind of the price fixing that. Even though it's not price fixing technically, but it's the kind of thing the Republicans generally promise never to do.
But we still pay the highest, one of the highest rates of for drugs of anywhere around the world, and essentially we're subsidizing.
Yeah, every place else.
Everybody else.
Yeah,
that doesn't make any sense, and especially because a lot of the drugs.
No, it makes no sense. I think it's a great idea, but again, it's kind of a violation of some rules.
What else do we got here? Let's see. Eurozone still a mess. Okay. All right. So the jobs report. Just get back there for a second. I put in the shadow stats chart here. So we saw 225,000 jobs added to the payrolls, a 3.7% unemployment rate, slightly ticking higher. It was 3.6%. So now it's 3.7%. But this has been rationalized as good for some.
Yes, yes. Well, everything is rationalized as good.
Yeah. Labor participation rates and. There's a whole bunch of things that were looked at in terms of this jobs report. And like, okay.
I wonder if I'm looking at the shadow stats. I wonder if it's ever going to get back down to the ratio it used to be back in 2001.
Well, 2000, even 2007. It wasn't that far.
Yeah, it was pretty, until Obama got in, these things were pretty close to each other.
Yeah, I mean, and you want to say that, okay, we go back a little bit and back in 2007, Shadow Stats had it at what, 14% when the unemployment rate was 9%. That was close. That was reasonable.
Yeah.
But now it looks like it makes no sense at all. Something doesn't. One of the two doesn't make sense, right?
Well, unless you count all the homeless. If you count them into the stats, you know, and some of the other crap going on where people don't want to work or they work a couple part-time jobs and they're all not counted properly, it's possible. But it should have dipped below 20% by now, it seems to me.
Do you think somehow maybe the gig economy isn't being counted properly? Because if you have less people in the, well, less people in the workforce would actually be a higher unemployment rate. Because you take the unemployment rate and divide it by the labor workforce. So if you have a higher level, it would be more. So if more people are coming into the workforce, you see a lower unemployment rate, right? Just a quick division.
Yeah. So maybe my problem is I'm not in a good area to gauge this, because it's kind of a jumping. You know, lots going on around here, and there's the trains are going back and forth, loaded with stuff, and the traffic on the freeway is horrible. There's very few opportunities to get on the freeway and make useful time. So I've lost perspective.
Because you think it's good. I mean, you've been saying that it's been good.
Yeah, it seems like it's good.
Yeah.
To me, but I don't live in Macon, Georgia.
But you also are judging that by a very small area outside your window, watching trains go by. I mean, it could be the same thing if you had a busy port, but who knows what the other ports are doing.
Right. And Oakland's a busy port, by the way.
Mm-hmm. So that's a big issue also. That's where the trains are going to, the port. If it's a busy port, if it's a, you know,
no, the trains are going to and from the port mostly.
They're not, or they are?
No, they are.
Yeah.
There are some trains coming from, there are some car carriers going back and forth. There's a lot of petroleum being shipped on the rails, and those are, that's something else. That's a different, but there's a lot of it, more than usual. It's, you know, it's, but it's active. There's a lot of, but mostly most stuff back and forth to the ships.
Well, I mean, it does seem to be that there is a reasonable amount of health in the economy. And, you know, like you say, there could be somebody looking out their window and saying there's no trains passing here or there's no trucks going by for whatever reason. You know, they see a drop off. So, but when you look at it and step back 3 or 4 feet from the whole thing, and you look at just most, you know, many of the numbers, the manufacturing numbers, the factory orders, you know, all the things that are going on. I mean, we're, you know, in the GDP, I would say the economy is in good, and the employment, the economy is in good shape. It's not in as good a shape as could be. Everybody wants, the magic number. We want a 4 or 5% GDP.
Yeah.
But you know what? We're a well-run country in terms of our economics and our output. And we're also no longer an emerging. We're a very well
established.
Yeah, well established economy that you don't see those kind of rates.
No, if you get 3%, seems like a miracle to me.
I have no problem getting 3% per year GDP. That means that every year GDP is growing by 3%.
Yeah, and it compounds.
Yeah. So here's the thing. If you stay exactly where we are today, no growth of the economy, is that so terrible?
Well, I've made this argument myself a number of times. It's like, why is that bad? And I don't have an answer to it.
Oh.
I don't know how it's bad. I mean, I agree. If you have a stable economy, and everything is like, you know, just stable, not going crazy or having any growth at all, but having no shrinkage.
Yeah.
What's wrong with that?
Yeah, I agree. One of the things that is very interesting and very disheartening at the same time, although it explains a lot of things, is something that I want you to pay attention to. When I say you, I'm talking about the listeners, because as a matter of fact, we're writing about this for my newsletter that's coming out, the Horowitz Company Economic Commentary and Review for the quarter. But basically the whole idea of where are we with global yields, number one, and more importantly, what is that doing? What's the impact on the other yields around the world? So here's something. Take a look at this chart. This is the yields on two-year treasuries or two-year sovereign debt from all these countries around the world. and I stacked it this way on purpose. You'll be able to see these over on DH Unplugged, episode number 464 on the show notes. So isn't this interesting? So what you have here is a positive number for the U.S. at 1.75% approximately for the two-year yield. And everything else is negative. Italy is slightly negative on the two-year. Spain is approaching 0.5% negative. Finland, France, Denmark, 0.75% or so. Netherlands, Germany, same. Swiss, down by 0.9%. So
yeah, the Swiss is number one.
Yeah.
I would never have guessed that.
We talked about how Norway and Switzerland and all these countries around there, they pays to buy a house because they're going to basically give you money to do so. So here's what's happening. Everybody's, why are rates in the U.S. going down? Now, let's set the stage. Rates go down when people rush to buy bonds. Or when people are actively buying bonds, the rates go down. Because what happens is it's an inverse relationship. Bond prices up, rates down. People buying bonds, bond prices go up, rates down. They sell bonds, rates go up. And there's some other things involved too. But here's the situation. You have Germany as an example that issues bonds at negative 0.75%. Who buys those bonds? What person or organization or entity in their right mind would buy a bond that they know they're going to lose money on?
You answer me. I don't know. You answer for me. I have no idea why anyone would do that, especially when the opportunity does exist to buy U.S. bonds, which do pay.
Right. So the answer is no one. Essentially no one. Unless they believe that they're going to get further into the negative space, thereby increasing the price and then trading it. Okay. But holding the bond to maturity, you're guaranteed in the German two-year to lose 0.75% per year for 2 years. You're going to lose 1.5% on your bond. You give them $10,000, you're going to lose 1.5%.
Yeah, you might as well use a mattress.
Yeah, or a match, because you're going to lose money. And we're not even talking about inflation adjusted. I'm just talking about absolute. Now, Germany issues these bonds, and when they issue the bonds, somebody has to buy them. Who's buying them? That's always a question. The ECB, the European Central Bank, is buying these. Why? They're doing their quantitative easing program, and they do not have a limitation. They have some limitation, but generally speaking, they're buying these bonds. Now, Germany gets this money in their coffers because they issued these bonds, right? ECB paid them. ECB is going to lose money. ECB doesn't care about losing money because they'll just go out and simply make more of the money through, you know, their quantitative easing program. Germany then takes the money and maybe they buy U.S. treasuries. Why? What a perfect arbitrage.
Yes.
2 years, they gain 1.5% on their bonds by issuing them, and they gain 1.75% for 2 years, 1.75% each year, 3.5%. Essentially, they make close to 5%. So why not? Now, the only problem with this is one hiccup, and that's currency risk. Well, that's a couple of hiccups, but the main one is currency risk. So if you want to hedge out your risk on this, it may cost you some money to do so. But let's say you still come out with 2% net positive. Why wouldn't you do this all day long if you're issuing bond and you have a guaranteed buyer? There's no reason. Just do it all day long. So when the question is now posed about why bond yields are so low in the U.S., considering the fact that the economy is so good, on a relative and comparable basis, the answer is because there is an absolute built-in buyer that is mechanically buying bonds because they're arbitraging it, and there's an unlimited amount of money between Japan, between Eurozone, and other countries that will actually go in and purchase treasuries. How's that for some logic?
That's pretty good.
So there you go. We'll have a bit more of a detailed explanation in the quarterly review coming up. So, well, let's go from crazy way out and far out ideas to far out space, the final frontier. Richard Branson's space tourism venture, Virgin Galactic, is planning to go public as part of a deal with the special purpose acquisition company created by Social Capital. So this guy, the CEO and executive officer of Social Capital, put money into this venture and Virgin Galactic. And now they're going to go public and expect to be profitable 2 years after it begins publicly trading, with the company aiming to fly tourists to the edge of space for the first time within a year. What do you think about that? You think, first of all, where are they going? It's going to go up and down, kind of have a little...
Yeah, it's going to go up and down. It's like a massive roller coaster with the biggest dip ever.
So they're going to set up... I mean, Elon Musk was all up in arms about this whole thing. And there's a lot of people that are really like freaking out, but like, well, wait a minute. He had to go to this special purpose acquisition company. The public markets wouldn't, and try to lay it off in the public markets. How come he couldn't get other players in here? And how come he couldn't use his own money? And there's all these negative vibes going on about this. I don't really understand why. I think Richard Branson is very cool.
Well, not cool enough to get the public to buy into this nonsense.
I mean, if I don't, they're going to be profitable. Do you think they'll be really profitable 2 years after it begins publicly trading? I mean, I'm sure there'll be a lineup of people. I don't know how much the seats are going to be.
Maybe a quarter of $1 million.
And you're going to go up there and what? Hang out up there a little bit?
Just go up and you come back. I mean, there's nothing to it. It's just like taking a joyride on a Concorde or something like along those lines.
Do they have to test like the effect of zero gravity on like scotch? Or on peanuts.
I don't think it's going to be. They're not going to be up there floating around. It's not as though they're going into orbit.
So you're not even going to get service when you're up there.
No.
How many people have you? I don't know if you've seen this, but how many people would actually fit on one of these missions?
I'm guessing 6.
And you don't need any particular training? Is it? I mean.
Well, I'm sure there should be a cardiologist around there checking you out to make sure you're not going to drop dead halfway up.
So maybe everybody gets like Apple Watches or Fitbits that are connected to a central server.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe you have to have a Fitbit on for a month before you go on the thing.
Oh, it could be. And they track you and all that.
Yeah, make sure you don't have high blood pressure.
So this is going to be interesting because I've seen before like on life insurance applications, you know, a lot of questions like... Are you planning on going scuba diving? Are you planning on going out of the country? Are you planning on, doing any kind of flying your own aircraft and all that? And if you are, and if you do that, you have to answer a whole separate questionnaire to make sure that, you know, you're doing it safely. So now I guess they have to add, are you planning on doing any missions to outer space on there?
Yeah.
All right, Boeing. No new orders for the 737 MAX for the third consecutive month. Duh.
They better start their discount program.
Yeah, they're not going to have orders for a while. I mean, until this thing gets, you know, totally... I mean, they have a big backlog anyway. But why would anybody start ordering them now until they can fix all the problems? And it seems that...
If you can get a super deal, maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
You have to assume they're going to fix it because if they, you know, you get your super deal, you get a real bargain, a bargain basement price. And if they don't fix it, you get your money back anyway. So it seems like a pretty risk-free investment if you want to fly that or if you need to fly that jet.
And that jet is, even if you ordered it now, it's probably a few years out.
I'm guessing.
Yeah. Well, a sad day. I don't know if you have been following this, but it seems that a fire destroyed a massive Jim Beam warehouse filled with 45,000 barrels of bourbon.
Yeah, this is a bad story. So this happened in Cognac some years, and I think it was in the late 60s or early 70s, where Martell lost a lot of their old stocks, and it took Martell, this is the makers of Cordon Bleu, for example, it took probably 25 years and only recently to get their old style of cognac back on the shelves. There's a 25-year loss of profitability. And I mean, I'm sure they made money on some of the cheap stuff, but still. I would say for people that like, especially Jim Beam, that black label that they promote sometimes on television, extra old or whatever they call it, is a phenomenally good bourbon.
I just find it really interesting that in a time when there are all these tariffs that are concerning some whiskeys and there is some kind of price increases and there's concern about the cost factors involved in all these whiskeys, that all of a sudden we get this big, giant fire.
Yeah, makes you wonder.
Now, they left the fire burning because they said that the if they put it out, all these barrels could be open and it would be washing down into a river or into a water.
That's what happened in Cognac. The products all went into the river and the river caught on fire.
Oh. Well, that's not good. John McAfee. So he plans to run from Cuba for the Libertarian Party nomination for the U.S. president. And he's also talking about creating a cryptocurrency.
He's been talking about his cryptocurrency for a while.
Yeah. And he's going to create this cryptocurrency. And I don't know why in the world he would say this and make it public if he's actually doing this. But he would say, it would be trivial to get around the U.S. government's embargo through the use of a clever system of currency. So I made a formal offer to help them for free on a private channel through Twitter. What does that mean, a private channel through Twitter?
By direct message, I guess. I'm not sure what he's talking about.
I mean, is he trying to be like all fancy with saying this? Maybe there's some kind of like unknown private channels?
No, I don't know if there's anything other than what you get. Yeah.
Yeah. So he said this probably.
Well, who's he talking about? Getting a system for Cuba?
So he's saying that if Cuba could come up with some kind of cryptocurrency, they can get around the U.S. government's embargo of goods, possibly, by, I guess, using this currency somehow in a way.
Because no one will ever figure that one out.
Well, not only will no one ever figure it out, he already said it. So what's the point?
Yeah.
They're going to be on the lookout for this. He said there's probably less than 10 people in the world who know how to do that. And I'm certainly one of them.
Well, that remains to be seen.
He also claims to have fathered 47 children.
Well, is it busy?
47 children.
Is he responsible? Is he paying their upkeep?
I don't think so.
Well, then he's an irresponsible father.
What he spends on drugs and cigars and alcohol is,
well,
I just want
sure
to have
he's
half smoking
some of the best cigars you can ever imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. Constantly. WeWork. This is something that I find baffling. Just totally baffling.
This is your new Crocs.
Maybe. But I'm just baffled by this. So shares of the office space manager WeWork is looking to raise $3 to $4 billion in debt before they go public. So they think this is going to instill investor confidence in the company somehow. What I don't understand is, why would any company load up on debt ahead of a public offering where they're designed to take in money to, I mean, I don't understand. I mean, it does create more capital for the company to use, and that's good. But right before an IPO, I don't understand how that embodies confidence.
This has got to be some new, when I see stuff like this, I'm always thinking, especially with it's a kind of a closed community amongst the venture capitalists and investors, especially around here. And there's a lot of seminars and there's a lot of guys giving lecture. And I get a sense that this is somebody gave a lecture to these people about how this works, with the idea that it doesn't instill confidence or something. I just like a seminar or something. And everybody went they all buzzed around it and they all talked to each other about it, thinking it's a good idea. And they come to the conclusion it's a great idea. That's the only thing that makes any sense. And it happens all the time.
And it's got to be probably led by the bankers who are underwriting the bonds.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Because the whole point is to go in. I mean, I don't know. Debt is good to a degree, especially when the rates are so low. But having a clean balance sheet, especially going into an IPO, just meant, because it's going to cost them money. They'll have money on the books, but it's going to all of a sudden increase their debt load. Right?
Technically, unless they're getting their debt from Switzerland.
But, well, yeah. Well, there you go. That's an idea. I don't know. It doesn't make any sense why they would load up on so much debt ahead of an IPO. It just it doesn't make any sense. The only thing you could say is that possibly private equity and people in that area who like to leverage up a company because they believe they could do a lot more, but still, that would be during the process of building the company rather than right ahead of an IPO for the purpose of instilling confidence. Something just doesn't make sense. I don't know.
Yeah, I agree.
Deutsche Bank, we got to go fast here because we're running out of time because we're going to break at 10 tonight, even though we were late on the open. So Deutsche Bank, you've been following this. Company's going to exit its equity sales and trading business, which in 2008 brought in about $2.2 billion in revenue, but will retain a small equity capital markets business. It's planning to cut its fixed income business, which was a big issue for them. They're going to lay off about 18,000 people, cutting about 20% of the total jobs for the company. But everywhere around the world, it's going to be one in five. Well, not just one, two, three. All right, you're out. One, two, three, four, you're out. It's some kind of a plan. They're going to be shrinking the amount of risk-weighted assets allocated to a traditional operations by about 40%. It's going to create a bad bank called the Capital Release Unit. You got to love that. Capital release, like, let's blow this crap out of here and send it into a bad bank, and probably the ECB is going to buy those assets.
Probably.
So the assets that they're going to use, these assets, the bad bank assets, are about $83 billion. They're going to take a total restructuring cost of about 7.4 billion euros, which is about, that's the total amount they're going to take. It's about $83 million. So this leads me to, or brings me back to where we were a little while ago. Negative interest rates. They are killing the banks. Absolutely demolishing the banks in Europe. For the idea that, you know, the whole point was to recapitalize the banks in Europe, stabilize the financial system, and at the same time, do what you can to stabilize each of the country's debts as well. You know, the debt load, the sovereign debt they had there because it was such a problem. But this is absolutely, unequivocally, just 100%, there's no question in my mind, a failed experiment. This whole negative interest rate thing. And if anybody could tell me, I'd like to listen. How the hell do you back out of this at any point? How do you go back to a 2% rate of interest?
It's beyond me.
Yeah, it's beyond everybody. So keep on plugging away and hope to God one day it just all of a sudden papers over and everything is great. But we know that we can see the differential in the financial systems between many of the countries that we're dealing with, like whether it's China, Japan, Europe, compared to ours when we actually did some radical fixing and kept interest rates on the positive side. They're all suffering. We're not. So something's wrong there. Trump was, constitutional law was being violated, it seems, by his blocking people from Twitter because they criticized or mocked him. So a federal appeals court today ruled that he has to, I guess, unblock them.
This is ludicrous to me.
What, that he can block people?
No, that anyone can't block people. That's the idea of Twitter. When I'm on Twitter, I block people constantly.
You're not president of the United States.
So it's like illegal for me to block Twitter?
But I think it has to do with the fact that if he's going to use Twitter as a news source for the public, that you really, as a president of the United States, you shouldn't
be
blocking.
You consider that Donald Trump tweets on Twitter are a news source?
Well, he says things like, for example, trade talks are restarting, or, you know, rates should be lower. He's making policy all the time, or not making policy, but announcing policy all the time.
Well, you know, the reason you block on Twitter, I would wish I was an expert witness at this decision. The reason you block on Twitter is not if people want to just get his information, they can just follow him. But what people do is they go on there and they harangue him. That's why I block people. They, you know, they're just off the deep end nutcases. You just don't want him in your feed. And although I doubt seriously he looks at his feed that much, maybe he does. But the point is that's the reason you're blocking people. You're not blocking them to keep the information away from them. They deserve to be blocked.
Well, not according to the Constitution.
I think this is terrible.
I guess,
you know, if you want to just follow him to get the news feed, as you put it, just follow him and shut up.
Yeah. Have you ever looked at his, I've looked recently at his feed and his mention or his replies, you know, people replying back to him on things he says. Boy, people are nasty. There's a lot of negativity in that feed.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, a lot. And then for the hell of it, I went to Obama's feed. They love him. It's just all, it's all rainbows and puppy
he's
dogs.
Blocked all the bad people.
Oh. He got ahead of the whole curve, huh? So if you want to help us better our studio from all these mishaps, or if you want to help out the show and help us out, two things. First, you can go donate over on dhunplugged.com. Any amount helps. We really appreciate that. We do apologize for the very unprofessional sound and the opening of this evening's show, but we'll clean that up on the actual recording when we send it out through the podcast system. The second thing, I'm going to a quick request out there if anybody's listening. I'm looking for, actually for my son. He wants a voiceover with some music background for a podcast that he'll be doing. Got the family in the business. He's going to be doing the Yacht Shop podcast.
Why don't you do it for him?
He wants a fancy one with like this, a female voice with this music behind it. And, you know, this kind of like, you're listening to the Yacht Shop podcast and with music and this.
You know, all you have to do is, it doesn't take a genius to find that. I mean, we had that British sounding woman for one of our experiments years ago. You know, and it's only like $5 a line. It's very cheap.
Well, if anybody knows somebody or...
I mean, I could get people to volunteer because, you know, once you're established, you can get, you know, people that will volunteer because you're doing something for them. But if you're just starting off, it's going to cost you $50-$60 max.
That's fine. Yeah, we can call Lisa. Lisa will probably do it. But anyway, you can write me a DH email at...
No, Lisa won't do it.
She won't?
No, she doesn't do voiceover.
Yes, she does. She did it for our show.
You can't imagine how difficult it was for me to get her to do it.
She did one thing for me too in the past, a quickie. But anyway, send me an email over at dhemail@dhunplug.com and we'll get it going. We have the Close to the Pin, which is going on now with Bank of America. So if you want to get your guess in the last moment to guess, is this Friday coming up? And we'll announce the winner in a couple of weeks. So get your names. You can win a T-shirt and all that. It's good stuff. All right, moving along very quickly here. Let's see here. Just staying on politics for a moment. Billionaire Steyer enters the 2020 Democratic.
That guy's an idiot.
Yeah, he's... Anybody... Have you seen his commercials?
I mean, he's so obsessed with...
Oh, he is.
He's just an obsessive guy. He's got nothing going on in his life. I'm upset about people like this. All they do is talk about Trump.
It is a weird phenomena. Well, first of all, he's done it to himself a little bit in that he wants, hogs, desires, and lives for the spotlight. So as I've always told my kids in the past, I mean, I said, if you don't want to get hit by the tomato, don't put yourself right in the front of the stage. Go a little bit to the side. So
this is true. And yeah, Trump is a spotlight hog.
Yeah.
And he gets blasted for it, but not to this extreme.
Well, where he's spending his own personal fortune to try to unseat him.
Yeah.
Crazy.
I mean, please.
Well, I mean, he could run for president. That's not a problem. But the other things were a little bit weird. The attacks and the, you know, it's over these horrible, these commercials with, you know.
Mostly him. Talk about a spotlight hog.
Yep. Yeah, well, I guess you've got billions. Yeah,
Steyer gets on there and he starts yakking away about the world's coming to an end because of this Trump. We must get rid of him immediately. Mm.
We did see one person fall off the race, Eric Stallwell.
Yeah. Swalwell. He's the worst, that guy. He's a local. He's
Oh, is he?
He's from around here.
Yeah, he's gone.
And he's just a nudnik.
Haven't seen too many nudniks lately. All right, let's see. Etsy is going to be planning on doing free shipping on orders, which is a good thing for them, right in time for the holidays. Social media. Instagram announced on Monday that the launch of a new AI feature that will notify users when a comment they write could be considered offensive before they post it. So I guess if you write, you know, you see a picture of some fruit, you say, hey, great melons. I mean, is that going to be a problem?
Yeah.
That's a problem, right?
Well, I think they're going to be looking for cuss words mostly, and probably not melons as a cuss word or a curse word or whatever you want to call it. I think they're going to look for certain kinds of things, and I think great melons is not going to be in there.
That's not going to be the one, but it may, but yeah. So if yeah.
Maybe somewhere down the road.
Mm. They're going to be testing a new feature called Restrict that will allow users to hide comments from specific users without notify those users that they've been muted.
Well, they have mute now.
I don't understand why. So let them be. Tell them they're muted. What's the difference? I mean, it's all about my followers, even though I mute them. I mean, it's just so stupid. Just social media just aggravates me. All right, we got the last version of Fun Facts. That's it.
Did you giving up on this like you gave up on the poetry?
Yeah, we kind of go through stuff. Huh. We go through different things, see what works and what's really resonating. So far, the limericks are the number one. People love that. Fun facts, not a lot of like love for it. Not a lot of hate, but not a lot of love. But let's do it quickly because I want to get you off on time here. Fun facts number one, when shuffling a deck of cards, the number of possible arrangements is approximately 8 × 1,067. That's more than the number of stars in the observable universe.
I missed that whole thing.
So when you shuffle a deck of cards, the possible arrangements that you could do is 8 × 1,067. I don't know. I'm just, I just get them and I put them in here.
Well, there's more stars than that, but go on.
One in every four cranes in the entire world is in Dubai. That's reasonable. I think that's reasonable.
Is that true and still? I mean, I think that's an old fact.
It may be an old fact, but it's fun.
Yeah, it's a fun fact.
Airport runway numbers actually indicate the direction on a compass. We're going to be taking on 4-9er, 4-9er. And then that's why when you look at those, by the way, you see the opposite compass heading going the other way.
Yeah, I'd have to.
That's true.
You get some dubious facts.
No, that's true. I know that for a fact. I know
okay.
That. I do know that one. When Play-Doh was first developed in the 1930s, it wasn't a toy. It was a way to clean wallpaper.
I believe there was some screwball origin of Play-Doh. This is probably true.
Can you imagine your whole house smelling like Play-Doh because your mother was cleaning the wallpaper with it? Ugh.
I love the smell of Play-Doh.
No, you don't. Really?
Yeah.
All right.
I love the smell of Play-Doh in the morning.
Be careful. You get muted if you say that on Instagram. Number five, clinomania is the excessive desire to lay in bed all day.
Clinton mania?
Clinomania. Not Clinton.
Clin.
Clinomania.
Like recline. Clinomania.
Not compass heading 490. 4-9er. 4-9. 4-9.
4-9er. 9-er.
It only goes up to 360. Let's see. Alexithymophobia. Alexithymophobia is the fear of opinions. Which
the fear of opinions? People are. What is that even? What is that?
It is not anybody that listens to our show.
Well, let's hope not.
No, they'd be curled up in a ball somewhere.
Let's put it this way: nobody I've ever met.
No. Yep. No. All right. Let's run it. This is a game that we play. It's not a solicitation to buy or sell any security. It's not a recommendation of any kind. Nothing on the show should be considered investment advice or a recommendation. If you choose to invest in any of the stocks mentioned, you should know that it may carry risk, along with the risk of a loss of principal. You should also seek out professional financial advice for your particular situation. We assume no risk as these are not to be considered recommendations. Horowitz Company, myself, or John C. Dvorak may invest in any of the securities mentioned and will disclose that on the website under the weekly stock picks section. You can go to dhunplugged.com and see all the names we discuss in the segment along with the performance information from the date discussed as well as any additional important disclosures. All right, why don't you take the list
I'm
here?
I'm glad that worked. By the way,
yeah.
How about one of these times taking that file and speeding it up by 1.2, 1.3% and see what it sounds like?
Okay.
I think it's still legit.
Okay. That's pretty fast, though.
It's fast, but not as fast as I've heard.
Yeah, well, it's not as fast as the mattress guy. Or remember that guy?
Oh, there's a couple of guys out now that's ridiculous because that guy's not only fast, but they clipped all the little blank spaces, so it just sounds like one word.
In car commercials, especially.
Yes. Well, we have a lot of we got a lot of green. We have three dead. The red is all dead money. It's nothing below 1.1%. So we don't have any big losses, and nothing was kicked off.
Pretty good. So pretty impressive. So
it looks very good. I mean, the it looks great.
Yep, 37% is 45% or 6% or 7%. I do not have a pick for tonight. Do you?
I don't have one either. Curiously.
There we go. Well, we're going to end right on time, even though I feel this is the first time in years that I've had such a malfunction of equipment. But I know why it is now. I'm thinking back on why it is. That's because I had Rode looking at my stuff and changing a bunch of settings to show them what was going on so they could understand. I did a screen share with them. So I changed a bunch of settings, and obviously that caused the problem.
Oh, you did. I refuse to do screen. Microsoft tried to get me to do that once, and I know it was Adobe. I just refused to do it. I'm not going to let anybody look at my screen.
I was in charge. I held the meeting.
Well, okay.
So,
but still, okay. All right. Well, another show coming up. We'll take care of it then.
All right. Talk to you then.
Okay. Bye.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, because I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pockets, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a mint. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, because I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.